Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on February 8, 2018. This is the Week 5 class of our 2018 12-week Dhamma study based on my book, The Truth of Happiness. This class is on the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
Okay, this is the, as I said earlier, this is the fifth week study of the Truth of Happiness course on the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path. And as I've been doing this cycle through, relating, besides just reading the chapter in the book, I'm relating another sutta to what we're reading. And tonight it's the Rahulavada Sutta, where the Buddha teaches his seven-year-old son the importance of right speech and, by extension, the virtuous factors, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And really, when you look at nearly any sutta, and I should probably say any sutta, if you understand the overall context that the Buddha teaches in, meaning dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, you can see how each sutta relates in a very direct way, sometimes an indirect way, but always relates to the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. It's Rahula is about 7 years old, it said, so this is about a year's end to the Buddha's teaching. And there's so many significant things about this short sutta. One is just that this awakened human being who now has great responsibility, and in a year's time his reputation has grown dramatically, and he's conferring with, besides his own Sangha, which is many thousands of people strong now, he's conferring with leaders in northern India at the time. But the gentleness that he shows his son, the brilliance of the metaphors that he uses, and that directness that is rooted in that gentleness is so apparent. It's one of my favorite suttas. One of the things that the Buddha says consistently throughout his teaching career is the wise understand the danger in even the slightest transgression in relation to the Eightfold Path, meaning acting in any type of unskillful way. And it's interesting that what the Buddha's referring to here is he caught young Rahula in a lie. How we've created, let me just step back a little bit, the problem of ongoing dukkha is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And we've created very subtle but powerful strategies to continue to ignore our own ignorance. And those have become part of the fabric of our society, these strategies to continue ignorance. And this is what the Buddha is referring to here, and what I'm referring to is a good example of that. We've even created a commonly accepted phrase to ignore behavior that is otherwise hurtful in a direct way towards ourselves and often to others. It's only a white lie. So if something doesn't seem to have any real consequence, even though it's not based in truth, it's okay. It's just a white lie. The Buddha would say the wise understand the danger and even the slightest transgression. So it's not so much the impact that a white lie or a seemingly insignificant half-truth has to others. What is significant is to understand that if we're finding the need to lie, even white lies, it's because our minds are still rooted in ignorance, or the lie would never come out in the first place. We would not act that way. And that's how the Buddha taught the virtuous factors. Not so much that we're going to be punished by an outside force or an outside agency or even some overarching spiritual system or principle that we're a part of. The Buddha is teaching awakening in relation to the context that he awakened to, meaning ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So in this context, recognizing that you're lying, even small lies, has significance because it points to you're still stuck in ignorance. So let me get to the sutta. And any, because we have such a big, no. I'm joking to those online. It's just me and Kevin tonight, and There's more people online than there is here tonight. It's a cold night in February here in Frenchtown. Any questions as we're going along, put your hand up or just holler out. So the Buddha was sitting with his son Rahula, 7 at the time. The Buddha asked Rahula if he saw the few drops of water left in the ladle the Buddha was holding. Rahula replied that he did. The Buddha tells Rahula, that is how little understanding one has who tells deliberate lies. So obviously he's caught Rahula in a lie, and he wants to teach him, but in relation to the Dhamma. And notice how he doesn't beat up his son. He doesn't really punish him, he doesn't punish him in any way. And this is how this is what I mean about gentle directness. He doesn't make someone wrong in reference to their self-referential views. He simply presents the Dhamma. And this way, in a very direct and simple way that a 7-year-old or someone really steeped in conditioned thinking could understand too. The Buddha then tosses away the few drops of water and tells Rahula, a person who feels no shame in telling deliberate lies has tossed away their mindfulness. What a great line. And again, referring right back to the Dhamma. It's not so much that we've told a lie and we're going to burn in hell, or what I was taught was that if it's not a real bad lie, you're probably going to go to purgatory for a little while. Yeah. So that gave me a license. I can deal with that. If I'm telling lies, even a seemingly inconsequential lie, it means that I've lost my mind. I'm acting in a way that is mindless. Again, referring to the Eightfold Path. In that way, there's no excuse. And if I try to make an excuse by saying, oh, it's just a white lie, I can only continue to lose my mind over these things. I'm not recognizing, I'm not using the Dhamma in the way that it's meant to be used, to recognize unskillful behavior and then take steps to develop skillful behavior, meaning develop the Eightfold Path. The Buddha then turns the ladle upside down and tells Rahula, a person who feels no shame in telling deliberate lies has turned their mindfulness upside down. That word shame, one of our students who's doing some editing for me, I wouldn't say it's an objection, but he said it was in regret in the way it's presented in the Anapanasati Sutta. Isn't this incorrect? Why would you put regret? The Buddha used that term as one aspect of describing suffering, sorrow, regret, etc. But again, in the proper context, it's simply recognizing regret or shame in this way from a non-self-referential view, holding in mind that it is a mind rooted in ignorance that acts in ways that are shameful, and to simply recognize that it's shameful to tell lies. And again, in relation to what we're trying to develop, it's not that we should judge ourselves harshly, but we should certainly recognize unskillful behavior, and if we don't regret it, we're going to simply continue it, but not in a way to beat ourselves up with. So it's a very important distinction. And even that idea of feeling skillful shame is appropriate in the right context. Again, not to beat ourselves up, but to recognize this is an unskillful way to live if we want to awaken. If we don't care about it, if we're not actually developing a Buddhist teaching, it doesn't matter how we act, does it? We'll just continue with our mindlessness. The Buddha continues, anyone who feels no shame in telling deliberate lies is capable of any wrongdoing. What another powerful statement. Even a seemingly inconsequential lie shows that we are acting from a state of mindlessness, and any type of behavior is possible from that type of mindlessness. It doesn't mean that we are going to follow, but we could, especially if we're not careful.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And especially when we start making excuses for our behavior, it doesn't really matter, does it? Who's it hurting? I use that excuse for I don't know how many years, 15 years, to excuse away my drinking and drugging. I'm not hurting anybody but myself. There was a big lie. That was a big lie that I was telling myself and everyone else. Most people didn't believe it, but I did.
And you're telling yourself that lie that it wouldn't hurt yourself, and of course it was hurting yourself too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it so much so that it brought me close to death at the age of 25 and maybe a few times earlier. But once I got stuck in that lie, or anybody else that tells lies and starts making excuses, even for the slightest one, like little, how big of a lie could this be for Rahula? But it was significant enough for his father, an awakened human being, to sit him down and say, you can't live like this unless you want the consequences. Capable of any wrongdoing. So train yourself, Rahula. I will not tell a deliberate lie for any reason, even jokingly. And again, think about, some people would say, well, he's being too hard on a little seven-year-old boy. No, he's not. He's teaching him in a very gentle but direct way to start right now, wherever you are, to develop awakening and save yourself from years and years of misery by continuing to ignore your own ignorance. Not even with it, not even in a joking way, Rahula. The Buddha asks Rahula if he knows what a mirror is for, and Rahula replies, for reflection, sir. The Buddha responds, in the same way, your thoughts, words, and deeds must be done with constant reflection. Again, creating or seeing that in the context of the Eightfold Path and particularly the virtuous factors. It's in our thoughts, words, and deeds, if we are well concentrated enough and have the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path to recognize when our behavior is unskillful. And again, that points to the entire Eightfold Path and the proper use of meditation for deepening concentration. So from that increasingly well-concentrated mind, we're able to see these things that we never even saw before. How many of us spend our lives telling little white lies and never even notice it and lose the lesson that's in recognizing, why am I doing this? It's because my mind is rooted in ignorance. How do I change that? I developed the Eightfold Path. That's precisely why the Buddha taught it. He awakened to the profound understanding that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that leads to all manner of suffering. And he taught that Eightfold Path to bring wisdom where there was once ignorance, to end our own suffering. And by extension, those that we'll come in contact with. Reflect in this manner, Rahula. Is this thought, word, or deed skillful? How do we know if it's skillful? Because we have a framework. Does it fit within right speech, right, and right action and right livelihood, or not? Is it skillful or unskillful? If it's unskillful, what do we do with it? We recognize it, and we do everything we can to maintain mindfulness so that we don't act in that way in the future. And that's it. And it, awakening in that way is really that direct. Recognizing unskillful behavior, understanding that it's coming from ignorance, no analysis necessary, and then develop our behavior within the framework of the Eightfold Path. Of course, we need the entire path to do that. And even in the course that we're taking, but always in the presentation of the Eightfold Path, it begins with right view and right intention. And if you understand right view, even at a mundane level, and understand right intention as the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging, you can see clearly how right view and right intention leads to a useful practice of recognizing unvirtuous or unskillful behavior. We need right view and that intention to recognize it to have the motivation to catch ourselves when we're telling lies or the other factors of gossiping or hurtful behavior or idle chatter or the following behavior from that. We need a framework to see it because our minds are rooted in ignorance. And in the strategies that we'll develop to continue to ignore our own ignorance is the ongoing the problem and distraction of dukkha. Is that clear?
Yes.
Okay. Go back. Well, I always go back one line just to keep it in context. Will it lead to harm for myself or others? I didn't go back. Is this, reflect in this manner, Rahula, is this thought, word, or deed skillful? Will it lead to harm for myself or others, or will it lead to release? In that one line, the Buddha's pointing even to young Rahula, but to any one of us that listens to this or reads this sutta, what's the point? It's release from behavior that would otherwise keep us rooted in unvirtuous, unskillful acts. So that release the Buddha is referring to is release from craving for a self-referential existence, craving for wrong views, and clinging to those views. The ultimate release is letting go of all of those wrong views and having an overarching or awakened right view. The Buddha describes that right view as a view that understands at a profound and penetrative level the nature of suffering, and a mind that is, and he describes a mind, an awakened mind, as a mind that is unbound or released from clinging. And another word that he would use is that mind is calm and at peace, a mind resting in equanimity. The Buddha continues, will this thought, word, or deed bring more suffering for myself or others, or will it have a peaceful result? A simple way of gauging our behavior, isn't it? Is this a peaceful thought? Is it a peaceful word? Is it a peaceful action? Or is it something that is going to cause harm for myself or others? And remember, even the slightest transgression is rooted in ignorance. When I read these instructions of an awakened human being, it's hard for me to understand how far we've gotten away, and I'm talking about modern Buddhism, and I don't mean to beat it up, I always qualify it, but how far we've gotten away from these simple and direct teachings, and how unskillful it has been to do so. I was going to go into something else, but I won't. If upon reflection your thoughts, words, and deeds will have peaceful results, then this is fit for you and fit for a person developing understanding. And again, remember, the Buddha is teaching a 7-year-old this, and he understands that this is not beyond the comprehension of even a 7-year-old. Just look at your behavior and look at the results of it. Rahula, all those who purify their minds through continual reflection, meaning mindfulness, will do so in just this way. Again, simple and direct teachings. Rahula, you should train yourself in just this way through continual mindfulness of your thoughts, words, and deeds, of the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path. And when we read that this past week, when you read what the Buddha is referring to, it's very clear what those thoughts, words, and deeds are. There's no ambiguity there. We know immediately how to act. If we're striving for awakening, for full human maturity. Let me end it there. It takes a well-integrated and refined mindfulness to be able to do what the Buddha is talking about and develop the Eightfold Path. But if a 7-year-old boy can do it, we can too. And again, it's a profound teaching that the Buddha is giving here and giving to all of us to be mindful of our behavior, to stop excusing it in any way, and use it to gauge our own ignorance or the development of our own wisdom. We've had some of the discussions that were so relevant on Tuesday, almost to a person, except there was 5 new folks, but the people that have been coming for a while, in one way or another, talked about recognizing their behavior and being able to change it, to practice restraint. Sometimes it takes sometimes it takes the consequence in order to get our attention, but often as we start integrating the Eightfold Path, it's simply the recognition that I'm now acting in an unskillful way, and to simply abandon that behavior, let it go. And that's developing the Dhamma. That's the simple and direct way of integrating the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path. And of course, it takes a mind rooted in concentration and motivated by right view and right intention to develop these middle factors, the virtuous factors. And now this leads directly to what's the most important aspect of incorporating the first 5 factors, right view, right intention, and the virtuous factors of right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And that's the next chapter in the book, the next thing that we're going to be talking about. Meaning the concentration factors. And I think the link will be referring to the Samadhi Sutta, because that really goes in line. So that's the talk for tonight. Any questions or comments, Kevin?
I agree. It's so... You have to really constantly be aware of right action and right speech. You just, I think because to just the nature of our society and our upbringing is just allows for these white lies and allows for actions that might hurt others, you know, if you think they're good for yourself.
But if
you can maintain that, the right action and the right speech, you know, I think the goal is to do that in order and to have that virtue in order to awaken. I mean, if you're going to awaken, you have to do that. You know, so.
Yes, that's the important point. If that's your skillful desire is to awaken, and if it's not, it really doesn't matter what your behavior is, does it?
No.
But when you look out on the world, I was watching. I don't watch. For years, I didn't watch the news at all. And then after the last election, I give myself about an hour or two each week, and I find that's enough to not lose my mind over it. But one of the reasons I do that is because people question, or they bring up what's going on in the world to me, and how should I look at this in the framework of the Buddhist teachings. And the political rhetoric on both sides is so steeped in wrong speech and wrong action. It's almost like people are saying things that they know are lies, and the underlying motivation seems to be it's because I have this higher purpose. It's okay to say things that I know aren't true or likely aren't true. And the whole world scene, or the whole political scene, seems to be devolving in this: who can tell the biggest whopper and get away with it? And that's the foundation. And what's so troubling to me is looks like it's becoming the foundation for our entire society, and we're excusing it away. And that's really, you know,
in our entertainment, it's all this silliness and lies and distraction that doesn't lead anywhere.
Not to get into the everything, but it's almost gotten to the point where no matter what you do is okay as long as you can get away with it. And the problem only seems to come up when you get caught. And then that leads me to what I was thinking about this today. And this is just an understanding of the nature of dukkha. When the Buddha said, "There is dukkha," he's talking about all this. It's almost to be expected that this kind of thing develops in a world rooted in ignorance. On an individual level, if you think you're getting away with something, what an awful way to live your life. To constantly be running away from yourself and the intense need to continue to ignore your own ignorance. And that's why the Eightfold Path, I think, is the only way to develop an understanding, because anyone, no matter who they are and no matter how they've lived their lives, if they develop the Eightfold Path, will no longer be able to ignore their own ignorance. And they'll be able to do it, hopefully, in a non-judgmental way by simply recognizing unskillful behavior and having skillful regret or skillful shame there. And then you can change anything. And remember, the Buddha taught anybody. He didn't, no matter how egregious people's behavior was, the Buddha never said, "Well, you're beyond redemption." He turned murderers' minds around. I'm thinking of Angela Miller as a good example of that. You know, if we at any point we can engage with the Dhamma and turn our lives around by turning our thinking around and accepting responsibility for initially for our own ignorance. So I think I gave two talks tonight. Mm-hmm. I really went on about that.
The virtuous steps of the Eightfold Path are the direction is very simple and very direct and very not very complicated for the layperson. I think for a monk, you know, the list of rules and laws is long and can be long.
Yeah.
For a layperson, and you know, but it's very all encompassing also. If you think of right action and not to tell lies and to be honest and to be open, I mean, it really gets bigger and bigger. It can
oh yeah
it, can encompass everything.
Yeah, it does.
Then you have to, you know, and it's, I think just that by itself, you're right, if you don't have the concentration and the centering and the mindfulness and the tranquility that you get from deepening concentration, you might miss the opportunity for that right speech and right action.
Yeah.
So that really, it just, one works with the other, it all just works together.
Yeah, perfectly. Works together perfectly. You mentioned the precepts that monks and nuns, depending on what school you're in, will take 240 to 270 additional commitments to virtuous behavior. But you're right, the three factors, right? If you're practicing right speech, right action, and right livelihood, you're covering all those bases. Something else, too, that when I finally understood what the Buddha was teaching, you know, when I finally started reading the suttas, there was such freedom and power in developing the Eightfold Path as the framework for my life, because I didn't have to consider anything else. I knew that if I was acting within this framework or recognizing when I was outside of it, and then developing skillful behavior from that recognition, I'm good to go. I know that I'm not going to cause harm for other people or myself. And that brings a great freedom, and it also enhances concentration. Another reason why we practice virtuous behavior is because we're acting in unvirtuous ways. Our minds are simply going to be too troubled to deepen concentration. So in that way, just like you said, it's all encompassing, and it's very synergistic and holistic in that way. Just a remarkable teaching and a remarkable sutta. Yeah, so. Well, any other questions or comments?
No, I don't think so.
We're getting home early tonight. Okay. We'll finish with the Karaniya Metta Sutta, as we always do. So
people online won't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'm, what am I gonna
meditate longer?
Me too. What am I gonna do getting home by 8:30? Okay. So we'll finish with Metta. So find your relaxed meditative posture, and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become mindful of the arising and passing away of your breath in your body. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you for a wonderful class. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace. peace.